The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello again, Babylon 5 fans. This is Raul Ibarra, joined as always by my friends Jim Arrowood and J.P. Harvey for the second part of War Without End on the Babylon Project podcast. How are you gentlemen doing this fine day?
Awesome.
Also awesome.
I'm doing pretty awesome myself.
Oh, that's good.
I've got good friends on the webcam. I've got good coffee in my hand. And I've got one of the best episodes of Babylon 5 sitting right there in front of me. Doesn't get much better than that. So, I kind of blew it already, but Jim, I'm going to ask you, tell us a little bit about what episode we'll be talking to.
Okay, well, we're going to be talking about the third season, episode number 17, War Without End, Part 2, continuation, of course, from Part 1.
Yeah, I guess our fans kind of would have gotten a hint of where we would be going from last week.
Yeah, and so we've got a lot of neat things going on in this episode. We get some answers. We get a reveal, a big, huge reveal at the end. That kind of brings things full circle, and we learn about what is troubling Londo and who is going to succeed who as the Centauri Emperor.
You know, one of you gentlemen need to remind me because there's a question I want to ask at the end. I'll let you guys think about it now. Is this actually an episode where we get more answers than new questions? Keep that in the background. We'll pop onto that. We'll pop onto that before we're all done.
All right.
In the meantime, Jim, how about giving us a reset and a summary for this episode?
Okay, very well.
Archive access initiated.
With Babylon 4 station personnel closing in on their location, Ivanova manages to fake an emergency to convince station personnel that they must evacuate. Sheridan flashes back from the future to help Sinclair to fit the beacon that will help Drawl move the station through time to the reactor core. But once again, Sheridan is thrown through time when Major Krantz orders more power channeled to the reactor. The power surge also results in throwing the station 4 years into the future and also causes Sinclair to age more rapidly. Since it is his second exposure to the time field, he will continue to age as a result. Seven ships arrive from Babylon 5 as the events of 2 years before now begin to unfold. Zathras is captured by Babylon 4 station personnel, and Delenn stabilizes Sheridan by giving him her own time stabilization device. But as a result, she now becomes unstuck in time, as Zathras puts it. Delenn then appears in front of Krantz and the newly arrived Sinclair and Garibaldi. Zathras gives the space-suited Delenn a repaired time stabilizer. As happened before, everyone is running to get off of Babylon 4. Zathras is trapped under a fallen beam, and everyone else leaves. But again, Delenn appears and pulls the beam off of Zathras. Outside the station, Sinclair tries to tell Garibaldi to watch his back, but is too far away to hear the message. Once everyone is back aboard the station and the Babylon 4 crew has been evacuated, the station is moved to the original timeline, and Sinclair tells them that he and Zathras will be staying aboard the station. He further explains that the letter he got on Minbar was from himself, and it explained that all of the events that will take place were seen before. The White Star departs and the station is moved 1,000 years to the past. Sinclair enters a chrysalis and is transformed into a Minbari. When two members of the warrior cast are escorted onto Babylon 4, Sinclair, accompanied by two unsuited Vorlons, introduces himself as Valen. 17 years in the future, Sheridan again finds himself still being held captive by Emperor Malari and in a cell on Centauri Prime. Delenn is put into the cell with him so they may share one last moment together before they are executed. Delenn tells him that they have won the conflict, but the victory came with a terrible price, and that they have a son named David. The couple are brought before Londo, who is inebriated, and he explains that it is the only way that he is able to escape being influenced by his keeper, an entity that is attached to his neck and controls his actions. Londo tells them that they are to get away on a ship that is hidden behind the palace. As they are leaving, Sheridan feels himself being pulled through time again, and Delenn's last words to him are a plea to not go to Zahadum. Back in the throne room, Jakar enters, and Malari tells Jakar that it is time for his end. Jakar begins strangling Londo, and when the keeper awakes, Londo grabs Jakar by the throat and begins strangling him also. After they are both dead, Veer enters the room. Delenn flashes into the future and finds herself in Sheridan's bedroom, watching him while he sleeps. She moves to a table where she picks up a snow globe when suddenly the door to the quarters opens and a female voice says, "Hello." Delenn is obviously shocked by who she sees and drops the snow globe. Well, there it is.
There it is.
Character files. Opened.
My first question, same guest cast or any differences?
We do have a couple of additions. We have special guest star Michael O'Hare as Jeffrey Sinclair.
Right.
Tim Choate as Zathras. Time Winters does not appear on this episode. Or no, mm-hmm. He does, doesn't he? Yeah. He does very briefly.
Right.
Then we add Ken Broadhurst as Major Kranz. This is his last of two appearances on Babylon 5.
Mm-hmm.
His first appearance was on Babylon Squared, which hooks up, of course, with this pair of episodes.
In the same role.
Yep. Season 1, Episode 20.
A side note of interest, this was a St. Louis boy who went to school in Nebraska.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I wonder where in Nebraska.
University of Nebraska, graduated 1962. He's primarily Broadway, lives in New York, listed as a writer and a playwright.
Interesting.
So a little trivia that connects him to both of us.
Yeah. And finally, then, we have also Bruce Morrow as the Babylon 4 first officer. He doesn't have a name. He's just the first officer. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5, and he doesn't have a whole lot of credits on IMDb and... not really any major genre credits.
Mm-hmm.
So there, though, that's the guest cast for today.
Okay, couple of additions.
Mm-hmm.
I will say how they dealt with Major Kranz was pretty good, keeping the consistency from 2.5 years ago and now.
Actually, I liked the character a little bit better in this episode than I did in the previous one, because he seemed more in command and more sure of himself.
Mm-hmm.
In that Babylon Squared episode, he just struck me as being nervous.
Yeah, well, remember, we just caught the pieces, the slivers. We didn't have the whole context.
Yeah.
Straczynski intentionally left that context out, and this is the fill-in for all of that. So I kind of agree. I do agree with your opinion, though. He definitely seemed a little more nervous. We got those out-of-sorts parts.
Yeah.
Initiating plot analysis.
Well, speaking of going back on some of that stuff, previously on the last episode, I guess the best summary is they had a pretty sucky day, except for maybe Zathras, other than the fact that he can't have anything nice.
Well, he can't have anything nice, and he is a beast of burden, and nobody ever listens to him. And you almost have to feel sorry for the guy because he's just so oppressed.
He's good at doings, not understandings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he will definitely be doing a lot this episode. But that's not where we actually start. We start with Sheridan on Centauri Prime, 17 years in the future. And he's asking the same thing that I did about the burning city. It's like, well, wait, this was stuff from 17 years ago, you know, almost 20 years ago. How is this happening? Well, you know, we really don't find out in the episode itself, do we?
No.
There is a trilogy of books, however, called The Legion of Fire, and they are canon. Do I pop the spoiler out and just leave that as a tease for when we get around to those books?
What do you mean? You mean spoil a 20-year-old book?
The book was from 97. Yeah, 20 years old. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Spoil
well, basically, Veer is busy leading a revolt.
Yes. The Centauri people are revolting. And they stink on ice.
Oh, gosh. The Legion of Fire is actually a trilogy of books. You've heard us talk about To Dream in the City of Sorrows a lot. Well, this is another one of those must-reads. The only problem is, while it's not hard to find the first two books, it is dang hard to find the third book, which is out of print.
Is it an ebook, Raul? Can you get it as an ebook?
Not through official channels. I do know it. There are some e versions of it that have been you know, floating around. It is not re released as an official channel.
Right.
So you would have to search out that type of access. I do know Amazon, the science fiction, the old science fiction book club had released it as all three books in a single hardbound volume. And I know you can still find that online, like on Amazon, at a reasonable price.
Ah.
So your best bet's going to be, if you want a physical copy, your best bet is going to be used booksellers or that Amazon thing. The single paperback can get pricey, which really sucks. But the Sci-Fi Book Club version's not too hard to get. And like I said, there is at least one electronic version off the record floating around in the ether. Anyway, back to the main events. As you say in your summary, Londo wants to thank Sheridan properly.
Yeah, so, it's not looking good at this moment.
No. Part of the question at this point is, okay, what went so south with Londo? This is definitely not the... I mean, he had some dark path. There was definitely some tragedy, a lot of tragedy, but he seems to have really gone off the deep end as far as embracing the darkness is concerned at this point.
Well, there's a good reason for it.
Mm-hmm. While Sheridan is busy hopping the timelines, back on B4, the CO is trying to track down that shadow explosion. The EMP that gave them the chance to slip the Rangers and the crew to command crew to slip on board. And Susan and Marcus are searching the station, trying to get to an access panel so that they can get things in order to put the time device onto the system.
Yeah, and they might even find one with any luck.
With any luck, yeah. Except Marcus insists that he does not believe in luck. More or less that you make your own luck. kind of funny the way he sort of just disappears. The guards show up, thump, whump. And he seems to have the Tila gene.
Okay. I'll bite. What's that?
Ring World.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
Sorry. Yeah, he turns around, thump, access panel. So was that luck or was that fate?
It was luck.
But luck doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't really matter what Marcus thinks. It was lucky.
Will the universe allow history to go off course?
who knows?
Apparently not. Or Marcus is making his own luck.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it was just lucky that he didn't close his pike before he knocked it against that access panel.
Right.
Sheridan is still phasing in and out, which is convenient because when he's doubled over, he drops his the remaining parts of his time stabilizer conveniently in front of Zathras. So he's got enough parts to fix the thing at least. And here's what's odd. Delenn seems to have this sense of something going on. It's like somehow she's able to sense John. I think she uses the walks over your grave sort of phrasing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder, give me your thoughts on this. Obviously there's some sort of connection. The timings are beyond coincidence, but is present Delenn somehow feeling the connection from future Delenn? Because around the same time this is happening, future Delenn is thrust into Sheridan's cell.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to say because, you know, she is Minbari. Minbari have, I don't know, it could just be being part of another species, or as you suggest, it could be that there's a
theory of time.
Yeah. Things going on inside the timeline that allow them to have a connection.
Past, present, and future all exist.
Yeah. Or it could just simply be they have a relationship that is deepening.
Yeah. Definitely a deepening relationship, because this is one of the things I was talking about last time. The big thing, all the John and Delenn shippers were waiting for, their first kiss. But it wasn't really, was it?
Right.
It's Sheridan's first time, but for her, it's at least 15, 17 years. So this is what I was talking about, Straczynski playing a bit of a mind trip.
Right. Because we've got two timelines that are touching.
Uh-huh.
Or two pieces of a timeline that are touching.
Or it could also be a way for him to give some fan love, because obviously this means he gets to do their first kiss again at some point in the future.
Right.
Yeah. Well, with everything running through Babylon 4 at this moment, it doesn't seem unusual that something like this would go on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and we get something. We do get another important piece of info here.
A mini reveal of sorts, I guess. Not really a reveal.
Yeah. But their son.
They have a son.
Uh-huh.
And his name is?
David. David, yeah. And there's a lot more about him in the books that we were talking about, too.
Oh, yes. A whole lot more.
And it's kind of scary, really. As a matter of fact, it kind of bounces between the books and the late season 5 what's going on there.
Right.
It's kind of a neat storyline. It's sad and tragic and interesting all at the same time.
But the final, yeah, I have to double check. The Legion of Fire doesn't take the absolute end of that story. It kind of gets it set up in a way as far as a certain gift that's given. The very last episode of Babylon 5 does make a reference to that particular gift as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think, where is... I thought there was some sort of final resolution to it, but I can't quite remember.
I definitely don't.
I can't quite remember what, but yeah, there's definitely some tragedy, and hope to say at some point there it ever gets fully told, some more stories involved there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, as far as getting the job done, which means moving Babylon 4 through time, Susan is able to fake a hell
a hell breach.
Well, I guess it is sort of a hell breach, a hole breach in this case, and gets the quarters cleared to give them an hour. Now, actually, you know, and we're going to be jumping back up 17 years ahead again. It seems a lot of this episode, at least a good chunk of it, happens in the future here. This is where Straczynski, as I said earlier, was giving us answers, I think. Sheridan explains what's going on with him, how he's from the past in the future, and apparently he's explained some of this to DeLynn. And you know, for a victory, she really doesn't paint a particularly rosy picture, does she?
Oh, no.
It's like they win, but the price is heavy, and
We get where the name of the episodes or these twin episodes comes from too. I think it was her comment, right? The war is never completely won.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of borrows a little Tolkien-ish there, almost in a way.
Mm-hmm.
There's always the next battle against evil, against chaos. But what is this price we're talking about?
Don't know.
We will know what part of it is. You know, having seen the, and. In that regard, I almost think she's being a little, I was going to say, I think she's being a little melodramatic about it, but maybe not, because Sheridan's a lot more comfortable. We'll see Sheridan a lot more comfortable with it than she is. But yeah. I also wonder, some of the events and some of the things that we see, like in the Legion of Fire and some of that, maybe she's not being as melodramatic as I first thought.
No.
Anyway, they're interrupted. Londo's guard has come to fetch them for their end. And Londo is, as you said, you said inebriated, drunk as a lord, I think is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can't, he is just himself lucid enough to be functional.
Right. Not particularly standing, but can at least carry on a conversation. Mm-hmm. I guess all those decades of carousing actually have a real value after all. And what is that thing on his neck? Other than what we know, it's called a keeper.
Yeah, it's in the shadows.
And
until he sits forward and you can see it. And if you read the books, it tells you they are from the Drakk, which are a species that was allied with the Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And they are on Centauri Prime. They are controlling everything through these keepers that they put on high-ranking people.
And we're going to see some of this in Season 4. And the much aligned Season 5 that everyone likes to diss because they think, oh, it's just Lockley and the Telepath War. What they forget is half the season is about this fall of Centauri Prime.
Yes.
Now, I do have one little grump here.
Okay.
Londo keeps talking about how they don't have much time, right?
Okay.
You know, the thing can't handle its alcohol. It doesn't stay down as long as it used to. It's going to wake up. If it wakes up, it's all over. So with that in mind, quit monologuing!
Uh-huh. But he is the emperor. He can do whatever he wants. I'm certainly not going to try to tell him to shut up.
Oh, gosh. Well, something to keep in mind, we've actually seen this scene already back at the very beginning of the series.
Yeah, a couple of times, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, remember, Londo knows the circumstances of his death. He's seen his death before. And he's telling them right here, flat out, his life's almost over. And he is actually setting them free in exchange for their help in freeing Centauri.
Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he alluded that they were going to be executed, and that satisfied his keeper that he was doing what he was supposed to do. So he got loaded, and while the keeper was sleeping, he told them what he was really doing, and he has a ship waiting for him and everything.
Right. So it's not quite, I guess it's it's like figuring out the nature of these keepers. Not quite a mental connection, but it certainly is able, you know, so it doesn't necessarily know what he's thinking,
mm-hmm.
but it can exert control. So,
well, apparently, though, it does know what he's thinking, because it could, he does say that it could wake up and find out what had actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch his plan unfold to try and wrap this up before the Keeper wakes.
Yeah, that's why everybody's got to get moving, because if the Keeper wakes up, he's going to know what has happened and reassert itself.
In spite of all the monologue that happened.
Yes.
Right. but it's not full telepathic connection. Almost like it has to be something that's actively asserted then.
Yeah.
I would guess, because otherwise it certainly would have been able to pick up what Londo was planning with Sheridan and DeLynn before he called them.
I think what you're pointing out is perhaps a small plot hole.
Right.
Well, no, not necessarily, because even telepaths, Earth Force teeps, they hear a lot of the background noise, but to hear what someone's actually thinking, they have to, unless it's really intense emotion or something like that, they have to make a conscious effort to hear. So maybe that's what it is. He's not giving the Keeper a reason to dig into his thoughts.
Oh, okay.
Your concern is certainly something shared by Londo, because mm-hmm. he makes a call out to his old friend, in this case Jakar.
Yeah, who is apparently standing very nearby.
Looking rather ragged, yeah.
That was a neat scene.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that their relationship has changed a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, this is almost a recreation of the scene that was in season one. Early season one. But remember, there wasn't any dialogue in that scene.
No.
So we just see them choking each other.
Mm-hmm.
But now we hear the context. And it's like I said, there's a huge change in the relationship here.
Yeah, these aren't enemies anymore.
Right. Go ahead and play that for us, Jim.
You are there, my old friend?
Yes.
They will never make it out alive unless you see, my keeper will awaken any second, and it will alert the others, and my only hope will die, and I will die soon after. They do not take betrayal lightly. We have unfinished business between us, Jakar. it stops me. I am as tired of my life as you are.
Yeah, that puts that whole scene in a completely different context.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Keeper wakes up, and they are choking each other.
We flash back then to Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
He gets pulled back.
For the last time, I think, in this case.
Yes.
And they keep, you know, there's this recurring theme. They keep trying to change the future. And it's not going to happen. Delenn tells him not to go to Zaha Doom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, pretty much everyone's telling him not to go to Zaha Doom. I mean, in the present and now in the future.
Yeah. But Kosh knows that he's going, or knew he is going, to go to Zaha Doom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he didn't say don't go. He said, I won't be there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that if he goes to Zaha Doom, he will die.
Mm-hmm.
So, why do they keep trying to change the future? Or in this case, Delenn's trying to change the past.
Yeah, it's a matter of perspective. I mean, you know, everybody knows that person that says, I'm going to do this, and you tell them, look, you shouldn't do this, you're going to get hurt, and they go ahead and do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't preclude that you're not going to advise them to make a wiser choice.
Yeah, that's true. But in this case, we're going to see in a few minutes, this next time when it comes up, it's going to be the person who probably knows better than anyone else. you can't change the necessary course of events.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, just as a final peek into the future, Veer comes in to the throne room, picks up the Emperor's medallion, and well, now we know who's emperor first and second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of a sad ending for Londo.
Yeah, and it's funny because in a way we've finally hit the end of the story.
Yeah.
Halfway through the series, we've hit the end of the story. And I'll just to make another side reference to some of the other Babylon 5 canon, one of the movies is called In the Beginning, and it actually connects in with this as well. It basically tells the initial story of the Earth-Mimbari War, but it's from Londo's perspective, and the way it connects in with this piece of the story, it really just kind of oomphs that tragedy aspect of it.
Yeah.
Well, back on Babylon 4, Zathras is using a spacesuit to try and power the time stabilizer that he's got. And, you know, it's hilarious. One of the things, you know, it's like everyone's talking about Zathras like he's not there. Half of the time, he really isn't there. He's around the corner or something like that. And Zathras is muttering to himself like no one's hearing what he's doing or, well, okay. You've got this clip of this, I think, right?
Yep.
Let's play it. It's hearing is understanding.
Do you think you could lend us a hand?
No, very, very busy. Zathras has idea.
Saw him.
Zathras did. So Zathras thinks. Perhaps power supply in suit will help activate time stabilizer. Will not last, though. Then he will be lost again. There. Finished. Now we wait.
It's quite mad, you know. He actually thinks the Sheridan's gonna materialize in there.
Marcus, we're stealing a station to fight in a war that was over 1,000 years ago. We're all mad. You know, I've been thinking. Delenn said that their great leader, Valen, came forward at about the same time. And Lanier said that Valen was Minbari, not born of Minbari. That's always intrigued me. You think we'll get a chance to meet him?
I don't know. It'd be an honor, though. He's one of their holiest figures. Defeated the Shadows, formed the Grey Council.
Captain?
No one ever listens to Zathras. Quite mad, they say. It is good that Zathras does not mind. He's even grown to like it. Oh, yes.
And that foosh was the suit filling up with Sheridan, of course.
Yeah. Yep. And so he comes back and Zathras is right again.
Quite mad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite mad, but never wrong, it seems.
Yeah. Now, you know, he's armed with knowledge of what's going on.
And so we get some details about why he seems to be right so often at the end of the episode, as I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. I don't know if we've got that as a clip or not, but definitely we definitely need want to elaborate on that a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of bits of information, I don't even know necessarily why they did it as far as the necessity, but Susan makes it a point to ask about Valen as if everyone is going to be going back in time. And they're talking about Valen as a Minbari, not born of Minbari,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not they would get to meet him. For me, that was almost a facepalm moment as far as, am I missing something or was it not kind of obvious at this point?
Yes, I was thinking, gee, thanks, Captain Obvious.
But we'll get it. We'll get the obvious put right in our faces here shortly. So anyone who hadn't put the pieces together are going to get to see it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But Zathras is mad, they say.
Yep, they say.
Zathras is like, I think that if our pets could think, you know, they keep talking about me and I'm right here. Ah, nobody pays attention. I'm right here. They act like I'm not in the room.
Well, in this case, he actually wasn't. He was down back on the White Star getting right. stuff.
Yeah.
So
yep.
It's like, how in the world did he even hear them? But
he didn't need to hear that conversation. It happens all the time. Right.
Yeah, you kind of suspect that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Sheridan back, Sinclair and he are going to go get the time device attached to the power core. And I don't remember if I asked this in Babylon Squared or not, because I thought we saw the spacesuit there as well. Anyone recognize those spacesuits?
Oh, yeah. That's easy. 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
However, those are not the actual suits anymore.
Ah.
They were unable to get the same suit that they used for Babylon Squared.
Uh-huh.
So they had to rebuild them totally from scratch. So those are brand new suits that they're wearing in this episode.
Ah, okay.
In the spirit of originality.
Yeah.
Right.
Still recognizable. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. You can't mistake that helmet design.
No. And if you're going to homage something like that, 2001 is definitely the one to do that with, because it does something similar to Babylon 5. It really stresses actual function rather than sci-fi glitz.
Oh, yeah.
While they're being Sheridan and Sinclair. By the way, has anyone noticed some similarities in the name?
Well, they both start with S.
Jeffrey M. Sinclair, John M. Sheridan.
Oh, we've been down this road before.
Yep. Okay. I have to point that one out.
Well, I thought you were going to ask, you were going to hearken back to the revelation about a son, Delenn's son. What's his name?
David.
What was the name of the main character, or one of the main characters, the doctor in 2001?
Oh.
David.
Yes, David. Yeah.
And now we have the 2001 suit, and it's probably coincidence, but...
No, Dave, don't do this.
Close the pod bay doors.
Dave.
I can't do that, Dave.
Dave.
So I don't know if this was just a quick little, you know, talk about homage.
Except wasn't Sheridan's father also David?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, but I don't think there's a connection there.
Not a lot of traction. But hey, it was fun.
Sometimes the coincidences are as cool, if not cooler, mm-hmm. though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Susan, while they're getting things plugged in, is faking a core meltdown.
Yeah, we gotta get everybody off the station, and if nothing bad's happening, there's no reason to leave.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would be, if I were Krantz, it's like, okay, thermonuclear detonation, weird people running around in my station, hull breach, now a core meltdown.
And he argues about abandoning the station.
A soldier set on task. from his uniform, he's on the Marine side, so.
Yeah.
Single-minded pursuit.
I say he works it out, though, doesn't he? He finally says, get off the ship. You know, he evacuates.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks to his first officer, who tells him, look, we can't stay here. There's nothing we can do to stop this.
It's like, if everything works out, we can come back.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if the Babylon curse kind of, you know, mentality kind of helped influence him. It's like, okay, it's time to get out of here as well. Babylon 1, 2, and 3, all disasters. Of course, something's going to go wrong with Bab 4.
Right. So, I don't know. It didn't get mentioned or anything. I would say the two of them are professional officers,
mm-hmm.
and they probably didn't let that enter into their decision. I mean, when your indications are that everybody's going to die, it may be time to, you know, cut your losses and get the heck out of there.
Yeah. And right about this point is when they have the first time jump. And this pops us right into the events of season one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sheridan, by the way, is gone again. And Sinclair says he's got a problem. We're going to see what that problem is in a bit. But as you say, Bab 4 CO starts in the back. So that they're getting the people off. Now, this time, when we have a tachyon burst, it gets Delenn. We jump in, presumably, the future, because we know this hasn't happened already in the past.
Right.
Delenn watching John asleep. Kind of happy look on her face. And we hear a hello. Delenn is totally freaked out.
Yeah.
You mentioned the snow globe.
Yep.
Who was that?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah. Fans all know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a lot of people might recognize the voice. The voice is pretty distinctive.
Yeah, sounded a lot like Laura Ingalls Wilder for some reason.
I don't think it was a jump that far into the past. And, you know, that brings up the other question. Have you noticed these flashes always seem to hop to some bad, disastrous event?
It wouldn't be any fun if they hopped into some nice, pleasant, comfortable thing, because then they just want to stay there.
Sandwiches and lemonade on the beach. What fun is that?
There you go.
Right. that would be, it might not be more interesting, but it's sure as heck be a little more fun.
Oh, yeah. I put me there. It's like, to hell with the station. I'm staying here. I don't care if I'm unstuck in time. This is great.
Speaking of time, Sinclair, his little problem when we see him again.
He's getting old.
He's getting old from the time jumps. Mm-hmm. And another little bit of a difference, I think, that he might see as far as a bit of problem is concerned. Remember, toward the end of the first part, he was absolutely confident about continuing on, not worrying about Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's worried about, we have to get Sheridan back.
Yeah. And see, now this aging process also, before we get too far ahead of this,
mm-hmm.
he knew about this, and this is why he wanted Garibaldi out of the picture. Because going back and forth through those time barriers is what is causing him to age. And if Garibaldi comes through again, he's going to have the same thing happen to him.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And we're going to get a little more explanation of that, too. So, it sort of has some implications on the nature of this trip for at least Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as Sheridan, Zathras is going to be trying to fix the time stabilizer again. Yeah. And, you know, I love it. For all the conversations about A and B theories of time, general relativity, it's Zathras's explanations of time.
Yeah. It's much more concise, and I can wrap my head around it.
Go for it.
No, not good. No.
Come on. Find what you need and let's get out of here. We're running out of time.
Cannot run out of time. There is infinite time. You are finite. Zathras is finite. This is wrong tool. No, not good. No, never use this.
Take that, Stephen Hawking.
You are finite. I am finite. This is wrong tool. I love it.
Like you said, you can wrap your brain around that.
I got a wrench and a screwdriver and a complete grasp on how time and space work. All at the same time. This is not right.
Half expected to see a sonic screwdriver.
I want to read Zathras's book, you know, the Zathras take on a brief history of time. Or
that would be a good one.
Well, what would really be neat is
the world according to Zathras.
Well, get Zathras and Stephen Hawking together in the same room.
This is a Saturday Night Live skit we're talking about. It's got to happen.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I rather suspect Hawking would be on the short end of that conversation.
Oh,
if his head just didn't flat out explode.
Yeah. Well, he's still looking for the unified theory of everything, and Zathras is very comfortable in what he believes. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, he may have the unified theory of everything.
Yeah.
The question is whether it's 42 or not. Okay, we've got, how many different mixed metaphors coming in here at this point?
Plenty. Let's not go down that road, because this is not the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy podcast. This is the Babylon 5 project. You know what I mean. So anyway.
Anyway, the old Sinclair is coming to answer the distress call.
But he's younger than this old Sinclair that we just talked about a few moments ago.
Okay, the past Sinclair.
There we go.
And we find out how Zathras got caught. Seems to be just after Susan and them leave. Yeah, his luck is not doing too good. Susan's going on to help speed up on the repairs, and oops, there's the couple guards pop in on Zathras.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sheridan reappears to Delenn, who for some reason has climbed out into the corridor, and we get a kind of a quick cut to a replay from season one.
Yeah.
Not the one.
Not the one what?
Yeah, not the one. Won't talk. Can't talk. Not the one. They told me. They did. Zathras listens. He does, yes. Zathras listens and does what he is told.
Which connects us back to the instructions that was given. Mm-hmm. If you remember in Babylon Squared, everyone's wondering, who are these they giving him instructions?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we know. Susan, well, CNC's now abandoned. They're getting everything cleared out. Susan slips into the abandoned CNC to get things set up for the time jump. She can't do it remotely.
Right.
Like I said, Zathras' comments make sense now, and what I really like is the way they interleave the season one and season three parts together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's seamless.
Yes. We have Garibaldi and Sinclair coming back to the station as they did in season one,
mm-hmm.
to help save the station, which raised a lot of questions. That we're seeing the other side of the story and why things were so strange.
Right. And it's actually interspersing the footage from season one in with the events here as they occur.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. Sheridan is finally found by Marcus. So now the big question, who is in the suit?
Hmm.
And remember, that was one of the other big season one questions. Who's in the suit? The voice or the hand?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we definitely know. It was long suspected, of course, that it was Delenn. But here's one of the big questions. How did Delenn get him out of that spacesuit?
Very carefully, I'm sure. And with a great deal of effort.
Yeah. Sinclair out on the hull of Bab 4 on his way back to join up with the others. Of everyone, and this is what I was referring to before, of everyone who understands this past, present, future thing, he probably gets it the best, unless it's maybe Zathras. He tries to warn past Mike. He's got to know better. But this is what I was talking about as far as that recurring theme. People keep trying to change time, but they fail. The universe or creation, whichever it has its course that it's going to follow, and you are not going to change it.
Oh, there! I think there's some truth to that.
Mm-hmm. The fact that they keep trying to change it does kind of, at the risk of getting overly philosophical, the fact that people keep trying to change it does seem to indicate it's like, okay, at least Straczynski's still leaving open the option and possibility and actually even probability that people actually do have free will. They're not just going along, but the universe has its determined course.
Well, maybe part of the script is to attempt to change it, and that's what happened in the past, and that's what will happen in the future, that everybody's trying to change anything anyway, and that's exactly what's supposed to happen.
The free will choices to try to change is what actually causes, is what's actually the causality.
Yeah.
Get a little paracausal here. Okay, now my mind is brain starting to...
Yeah, I know. I'll be out in the car.
But with this latest time jump, Sinclair is now even older.
He's getting gray.
He's definitely getting gray. They've all met up on the command deck. Sinclair is going to send them ahead. He claims he's got just a few more settings to go, and he gets called out by Marcus. It's a one-way trip, and Marcus knows it.
Uh-huh. Well, and let's face it, right from the very beginning of this two-part episode, Sinclair knew it was a one-way trip.
Mm-hmm. And how?
Well, because he received a letter from himself.
From himself.
Mm-hmm. 900 years in the past.
Right. So wonder what he's going to do. Oh, one of the things that has been a little bit confusing up to this point at times, we keep hearing about the one, and at one point it seems like one person's the one, and another point it seems like another person's the one. It's like, who is the one? And this gets into the whole member. Well, did you get a clip of this?
I did.
Let's go ahead and play it, and Zathras explains things better than I can, usually.
Zathras, something I don't understand. You said you followed the one, but the one you pointed to was...
Was Delenn. Yes, Zathras knew. Zathras is oldest living caretaker of great machine. 110 years old. Zathras has studied the great machine. Knows things even Drawl does not know yet. And I know you. And I know you. And I know you. All Minbari believe is around three. Three castes. Worker, warrior, religious. Three languages. Light, dark, and gray. The nine of the Gray Council. Three times three. All is three. As you are three. As you are one. As you are the one. You are the one who was. You are the one who is. You are the one who will be. You are the beginning of the story, and the middle of the story, and the end of the story that creates the next great story. Ah. In your heart, you know what Zathras says is true. Go now. Zathras' place is with the one who was. We have a destiny.
That's really poetic.
Really, very, very. That whole Mimbari symmetry about three.
Thought it was neat that Sinclair is called the one that was. Makes total sense in the story. But isn't this his last appearance on Babylon 5?
Yeah.
I believe it's his last appearance on anything.
Actually, Jim, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
But is Zathras calling him a has-been?
No, not at all.
I mean, you're the one that was?
In fact, they're in the process of the becoming of that one.
Yeah.
A destiny to fulfill.
Yeah, a very interesting one.
In fact, you could almost take it, since we're getting so metaphysical, he's in the process of becoming the one that was.
I think we'll see that in the last few minutes of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it kind of leaves us a little bit of in a somber mood of the whites on the White Star. I mean, the way Sheridan just says, let's go home, really kind of captures that mood. But I don't know, when you look at what's happening, you kind of wonder if their sadness is a little bit misplaced. And we'll be following that up. We've got one more clip to play. Remember that whole Mimbari, not born of Mimbari thing?
Right.
Do you have Delint's comments? And I think it probably Marcus's little epiphany at the end.
I believe so.
Yes. That door is closed forever. And it is not the only one. Lanier told you that 1,000 years ago, human and Mimbari souls began to merge. Mimbari souls were being born in human bodies. Something happened that opened that door between us. My change was in part to even the scales and restore balance between our races, using a device my people discovered 1,000 years ago. You see, if my people had found Babylon 4 with a human aboard, they would never have accepted it.
Dear God, a Mimbari not born of Mimbari.
So, we cut to a scene of Sinclair building that puzzle.
Chrysalis device.
Chrysalis device that we couldn't quite figure out what it was until it was done. And he puts the triluminary in place, and we know there's going to be a big change at that point.
Right. It's the same machine that changed Delin, and it's like that machine is sort of a closed loop.
What was the statement at the beginning of the last episode? The Vorlon, after the letter is handed off to Sinclair, and the Vorlon says, he is the closed circle. He's returning to the beginning or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And now here we are toward the end of part two, and we're seeing in part at least what that meant.
The loop mm-hmm. is closed.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why, that's probably why the mood on the White Star is somber. It's over. It's finally done. And it's the closing of that chapter. And I don't know when I finish a project or something and it, you kind of have mixed feelings. You look at it and it's like, wow, that's really neat. I wish it wasn't over so soon. I sure enjoyed getting to the end.
Mm-hmm. there's actually a sense, good sense to that. And of course I know part of it's going to be they're missing him. You've got the loss of a friend, but the extent to which this is a beginning and opening for Sinclair is incredible. And that's one of the ways that I like how they end this at the very end, because what do we get? We've got Babylon 4 with the two Vorlon ships outside of it, right?
Right.
And as Jim says, two Minbari warrior cast are greeted by Zathras, and Sinclair introduces himself as Valen, with two Vorlons fluttering on either side to give credibility. Can you not ask for a cooler ending?
That's pretty impressive.
That's goosebumps.
Or one that gives you so much hope.
Well,
and that's why I was questioning. Hmm?
Well, yeah, and see the there's a bit of irony in this episode, because the command crew of Babylon 5 has facilitated the return or the sending of Babylon 4 to 1,000 years earlier, when the Minbari and the Vorlons defeated the Shadows the first time, which if right. this had not happened, the Shadows now would have a cakewalk in defeating the humans and just taking and dominating the galaxy.
Well, what would there even have been at this time? We don't know that the Shadows wouldn't have won 1,000 years ago. Delenn's comments about that, let's face it, without it actually have happening, it's that's speculation on her part.
Oh yeah, well yeah, their own facility was destroyed by the Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd asked Zathras, they would know.
Yeah, it'd be a very interesting explanation, but a lot of circles have been closed with this episode.
Right.
Raul, you asked a question at the beginning.
Yes.
Do we get more answers?
Do we get more? I was going to say, I ended up asking a couple of questions. Was it inevitability? Yeah. So did we get more answers than questions raised?
I'll go first and say yes.
Yeah.
That we've come to a point now where we're ready to see an all-out assault against the Shadows. So we have yet again, and so it begins.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The final throttling of the Shadows.
I agree.
Except it's going to take most of the rest of the series.
Yeah. And then following that, once the Shadows have been dispatched, then it's time to clean up things at home.
And we still see, even then, how the war is never completely won.
Absolutely not.
But we all, well, and it's also fitting that we have the questions answered, because we were shown the end of the story at the beginning of the series.
Yes.
Except we were shown it without any sort mm-hmm. of context. Now, at the midpoint of the story, we are given the end of the story again with the context. So now we know how the story is going to end, and we know the context of its ending. And the rest of what we have is that
journey. You know what's neat about this, uh-huh. too, is I didn't feel spoiled or let down by knowing the end. At this point, the excitement for me was seeing how we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. What is going to happen to get us to the end of the story?
And it takes a brilliant storytelling to get that effect out of someone.
There's going to be a lot of bloodshed to get us there. I know that.
Yeah. Or as Dylan puts, a terrible, terrible price.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do have to toss in one last tidbit because there is another. One of the things, and folks, if you haven't read To Dream in the City of Sorrows, got to read it because there is a little bit more to the story that we find out. Sinclair truly does have his happy ending. One of the things a lot of people wonder about is, well, what about Catherine Sakai?
Read the book.
Read the book.
Yeah, he's giving me homework.
Read the book. Yep. Oh, you haven't read it, so we're not going to spoil it.
I just told you, I'm good with knowing the ending. I'm excited to see how we get there.
Okay, in that case, Sinclair truly gets his happy ending. It's not just one human, it's not just one Mimbari, not born of Mimbari, that has something to do with the souls being transferred. So you get a very happy ending. Yes. Let's face it, JMS, he might like to play with our minds, but he's a hopeless romantic at the end of it all.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts, gentlefolk?
I think I about got my nickel's worth in.
What's next? After all of this,
what's next?
What could be next?
Yes.
The rest of the story.
Well, actually, what is next is...
As another famous Harvey puts it.
Yes. we get Walkabout, episode number 18 of this season.
Walkabout. That is another Stephen Franklin story.
Yes, that's a Franklin-centric story. And... He's resigned. Franklin is walking around trying to find himself.
As I recall, this is a little bit of a mental break after two episodes of not mental break.
Well, it definitely broke my brain when I saw it the first time. So.
And there's a whole lot more happening than just Franklin walking around on this.
Right.
Yeah. It's too much in some cases.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do have to make a call out on this episode. There is a video game that I play with a very active community. It's called Destiny. In fact, JP plays as well, at least at times. This episode has got to have a call out to someone I've been talking to in the Reddit community for Destiny, KDYISD. We had made a comment regarding... one of the new ships in Destiny, it looks an awful lot in Destiny 2, the second, it looks an awful lot like a Star Fury.
Oh.
And we got to comparing notes, and JP, you can toss your thoughts into this. The Awoken, boy, are they not Mimbari-like? I mean, even their fighter ship with the three wings looks like something the Mimbari, a cross between a Mimbari fighter and a Vorlon.
Yeah.
Ship.
Yeah, nice tip of the hat, I suppose. I can't imagine that it's coincidence.
Well, and then look at the Fallen and compare them to the Narn. The warrior race fallen from the heights, or the Centauri and the Cabal.
Yeah. Yep.
And our big question, which one of the Cabal leaders is Cartesia? But anyway, I had to give him a call out because we're going to be picking up a new listener to the show, and he's going to try and get a rewatch organized with some of his friends.
Ah, cool.
Well, that's always
so
good.
Yep. Call out to KDY.
Fair enough.
Okay. Anything else, folks?
Well, did we have some boom?
Well, do you want to get some feedback, though, especially on this episode?
Yeah.
But to answer your question, you know, there was a lot of shaking, there was a lot of rumbling, foam pillars and bricks were falling, but I don't know. I don't. There was some fake boom, but I don't think there was any real boom today.
Oh, I don't know. I think maybe the reveal of who Valen actually is was maybe worth a little boom.
Okay, right. A metaphysical. Yeah, okay. There was a lot of metaphysical boom. But physical boom, not today.
No.
There's always boom tomorrow. Yeah. No need to worry.
Indeed.
That there is. Good night, everybody.
So long. Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.